sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
We choose directly who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power.
Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Bluewater, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho. Good evening, everybody. This is Will Bluewater. This is Oklahoma Native American Church Radio. And this evening, we're going to be speaking with Audrey Scott Williams. She was the vision keeper who led the Trail of Dreams World Peace Walk over six continents between 2005 and 2009. And I'll let her tell you about everything else. We're expecting Mark not with us yet, so we'll get right into it. How you doing, Audrey? Your mic's live.
I'm doing great, Will. It's so wonderful to be with you today on the show.
Well, normally Mark would do your Mayan birth reading, and since he's kind of I don't know if you've ever had one of these readings done before, but I'd rather have. I could give you a little bitty one. Oh, here he is. Here he is. Okay. Yeah. See. Well, speak of the devil, and he appears. now, Audrey, do you have? Do you want to go privately into the where the public can hear and give out your full birth date, or was it okay? Whatever.
It's okay. I can give you that.
Okay, he did.
Give me just a second here, because my
so it's blog June 8th. Talks.
Hold June on, 8th. Just give me a second, because I'm not. I think I'm okay. I got to get ready, because I didn't have my stuff ready here, so just
yeah,
give me
call
a second
you,
here.
You must have just run in from outside, because I
well,
called
I
you.
Well, I had to, my... I was going to be back on time, but I had my neighbor, and I started chatting with him, and then I realized, hey, wait a second. Well, his wife popped up her watch and said, it's 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
All right, I'm ready.
Okay, June 18th, you say?
Okay, June 18th, 1955.
Okay. So you're almost exactly 6 months younger than I am.
Oh, wow, okay.
December 8, 1954.
Wow.
And
that was
of course,
1955, right?
I'm sorry,
June 18th, 1955, right?
55.
Okay. So, in the traditional Mayan day count, you were born on a day called Six Eeks, Ish, or Eeks. It's a jaguar glyph, the Ish or Eeks glyph. The six kind of means things about a lot of tests and a lot of things to learn and pick up things. So you've probably gone through a lot of things. probably a pretty wide range of things in your life, varying things to learn. And some of those probably may have not been too easy.
Right.
There could have been some trials and tribulations there. And the other aspect of that is the jaguar energy, and that's more female energy, and also brings elements in there. What we would say probably verge on the aspect of almost like magic. Not magic as most people think of it, but magic in the good sense.
Yes.
Kind of spiritual magic, basically. And so and there's a little bit here in this cycle about purifying things.
Mm-hmm.
So along the way, you've probably gone through a lot of things that kind of do almost a self purification of yourself.
Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm.
You know, get rid of some stuff that you didn't need.
Well,
everybody sort of does that to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to switch in another part of reading here, and this one is with an expanded Dzogchen calendar. The one I just did for you is like more of a traditional Mayan day count reading. Next one I'm going to give has a little bit more to it. It has a forward flow of time, a backward flow, where these two flows come together, a unity or zero point type of thing. So we'll go over the forward flow, and that's how we normally perceive time. There's actually a backward flow of time, too, and our senses are not designed by Creator to detect that. Because if we did detect it with our senses, then our reality wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
So our senses are designed specifically this way. So we'll do the forward flow, and this is the way we normally perceive time. And yours on the forward flow is all about peace.
That's for sure.
Childlikeness, peace, soul, joy, things about forgiveness, balancing of things. So this would be an aspect that's probably been around you even since birth.
Yeah.
And it has an aspect here that spreads out not just locally, but spreads out over a vast distance of people, time, space, and stuff, basically the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very encompassing, I guess is the way to say it. And it has an aspect here also about truth. So I would say things about truth and peace have probably maybe been a big aspect of your whole life, actually.
Right.
Now, when we go on the other side, on the backward flow, this is stuff that may have been showing up in your life more recently, say since the Earth moved through the galactic equator back in 1998 and continuing to do that. So this, somewhere in that time frame, right before or after this aspect of what I'm going to talk about next, you might have seen getting stronger in your life. And it's, again, about this whole thing about purifying.
Mm-hmm.
It also has this aspect of universality, but it's bringing in things about creation, giving birth to things, belonging, natural ways. So it's telling me that you are kind of going through not just yourself, but other people around you, and very likely, like the Hopi talk about, a purification day for the planet or time period, going through that and helping. The things you're doing is basically to serve to help birth a new cycle.
Yes.
The world cycle we're transitioning into. And so it has an aspect of that. and and balancing things and equalizing things. And it also is bringing an aspect in here of the star system of the Pleiades, which actually shows up with a lot of our guests. So they all seem to be Pleiadian.
I said, yeah.
Are you identify with that?
I can't. Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So now where these two come together, you got peace converging with purifying and birthing natural ways. And in the middle, where we have the zero point or the balancing point, it is balance. It's literally it's most of the energy here is balancing things, about correct actions, tuning into things, especially Hunebku or Creator.
Okay.
And it also has an aspect of here of working with the sun, energy, and also service.
Yes.
Helping others and doing stuff like that. So in a nutshell, what I see is the bridge or doorway from you from this world cycle to the next. It's really pretty much all about helping other people and bridging them, balancing them into how Creator does things and creating harmony and some peace and all that with it. Yeah. And inspiring other people, you know, to do that.
Right, right.
That's a large part of it. And this glyph here, your peace and this balancing energy, they're both green, so that's going to connect into heart chakra energy. Also, the capstone or top of a pyramid will generate this particular color frequency as well. And if in the Mayan medicine wheel, the green is in the center. And it's also, if you look in the Popol Vuh, green is when they're transitioning, when they're going through the time of darkness and the sun's gone, then they have two prayers in that book. And I think it's part three or four, I can't remember. But anyway, in those prayers, that's the only path that they mention. They don't talk about the red, the black or blue or the yellow or white paths. They only talk about the green, the centering path. So that might be something that you might want to read about and contemplate. Those particular prayers are in the Popol Vuh Mayan Council book. That might help you.
Okay, okay.
All right?
All right. Wow, Mark. You seem to sum up my life.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was introduced to this back in 2007 by, Robert Shrewsbury and I go back to 1985. But in those intervening years, he became friends with a Mayan elder who's pretty well-known, Carlos Barrios. Carlos moved up to Cedar City, Utah, and was making his living as a sculptor. And Robert met him, Carlos had written a book in Spanish about Mayan astrology. And another really useful thing about this is if you know your Mayan birth date, you can find out when your next one is, and that is the best time possible for you to go out and do a vision quest or just do something really special. And I've had some the first time I did it, I had a really profound. Well, it was a very simple. Very simple message with a very profound fulfillment. I was told I would have to go east and I would have no choice. And that's exactly what happened. I was in Utah at the time and I'm in Tennessee now. And the way I landed here, one of the first things Robert told me is that he said he had electrical problems. He says think possible interference from either good or bad sources. And I was having problems with my alternator, and I was actually headed to Illinois. And I decided, I knew I had some friends here. I'd spent a couple months here in Crossville waiting for a small inheritance that I got from my mom's estate in 2009. And I had some friends here that I'd spent time with Thanksgiving time. And Linda was normally there and actually should have been there. And if she hadn't been there, it would have been 13,000 richer, because I spent it all, you know, trying to figure out how I was going to live. I bought an old RV, and anyway, I was stripped of all that by the time I landed at her door, and or landed at the little meeting place where we were some Chickamauga Cherokee friends had a little church. It's a little garage church, and very typical of what goes on here in Tennessee. And I met her. Yeah. And it was so matter of fact. I just she shook hands with me, and she had been praying the day before, you know,
wow,
that she wanted to get married, but she thought it was an absolute would never happen, you know. But she asked anyway. So I showed up, and I just called her up on the phone. And I said, "You and I got something to talk about, don't we?" You know, it was just. And so, you know, I went over to visit and never left. Spent the first night in the guest room, and that was around May Day of 5 years ago, and then we had a traditional Cherokee wedding on the 30th of May, and you can look at that on YouTube, traditional Cherokee wedding. Anyway, I just want to drive home. Should it be
well,
about
her,
me? It's,
Blue
it's
Otter?
Getting there. Yeah, it's just very effective.
Her
yeah.
The next time hers is going to show up again is coming up on December 20th, 2015.
Oh, okay.
So that would be the day that she would do the vision course.
Wow! And that also falls on the winter solstice. Wow!
It does.
Well, the other thing I noticed, since Creator's been talking to me all these years, is I usually get a really profound something. The most profound thing came on spring solstice. Back in 98, I was told that the weather in 2005 was going to be so bad that it might even shut down computers all over the planet, and it would be known as the year of havoc. And that's exactly what happened. And so anyway, I just learned to, you know, really, really be watchful around the solstices as each new season starts, and then on your Mayan birthday, and go ahead, Mark. You got anything else to say? You want to just turn Audrey loose and tell her?
That's good enough. And let her talk for a while.
Yeah, tell us about your book and your travels, and you know.
Well, I have a new book out called Awakening the Heart of the Beloved Community. And in this book, I feature 28 authors and voices, diverse, all ages from 16 to 103, all walks of life. And what I want to do is try to engage us in how do we have a conversation about finding the path back to remember who we are, so that we can bring our different directions together. And I guess you could say one way I'd say it is engage the sacred hoop to guide us forward, which I think is a major piece now. You know, I want to kind of connect what you said, Mark, in your reading to where my path has taken me. Back in 1993, I had a heart attack. I was 35 years old. Doing too much, going too fast, all of that. It was mild. I call it a heart-opening experience. But what happened as a result of that, and it really started to come in between 1996 and 1998, and I think you mentioned 1998.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what happened, I was traveling with some traditional elders from different traditions. I always seem to be in the middle of wisdom keepers from different traditions, especially elders. And I was invited to come down to South Carolina, where an elder from Africa, Mamfatu Sek, at 110, was coming to this country. She wanted to come to Turtle Island. She wanted to ask the wisdom keepers of Turtle Island for permission and forgiveness for the way her ancestors had come here, because through the system of slavery, there was no opportunity to ask permission to be on the land and so forth. And there were healers from and wisdom keepers from all over the Turtle Island, down into South America, out in the Pacific Islands. And we met for 9 days, and it was the most surreal experience where you don't know, you know, you have one foot in the real and one foot in the mystical, spiritual world, and you see so many things happening around you that you, it takes a lifetime to really integrate that experience. It's like a massive vision quest all at one time. But what happened after that, you know, at that point, I was a dean of a college. I was, you know, on the fast track to success. And then comes the heart attack, and then comes the awareness that I'm not living the life I'm here to live. And, of course, you talk about purification. Wow. You know, everything that I built at that point, I knew I had to walk away from. And that was really very hard because I had to become, I guess you could say, I had to let go of everything until I was like a baby being born. And it was after that experience in off the coast of South Carolina with wisdom keepers from all over that when I came back, the energy in my body was, I had, I couldn't even control it. I mean, I would blow out electrical circuits, I'd blow out light bulbs, I'd don't even get me near a computer. And then I started having these visions of drawings, and I started drawing them on the walls in my bedroom, very sacred geometry, connections between this dimension and outer dimensions. And it's a miracle I wasn't put in the insane asylum because I couldn't stop the flow. And that flow went for, I think it was 89 days nonstop. And some of the traditional wisdom keepers that I traveled with would call me in the middle of the night. I mean, it was like they were connected to this experience. And so I wrote a book called The Diary of Now Time Prophecies that chronicled those 89 days. And at the end of that, the end of that was 1998. And I honestly didn't know who I was in the sense of, where do you go from here? You've been stripped bare. Now, what are the ancestors saying? What do they really want me to do? And how in the world am I going to do that? And in 1999, I had the vision. I was in Wales for the bringing together of five flames that had been lit on five continents and flown by military from different countries who agreed to fly these flames into Wales to light the world peace flame. And when I was walking back from that ceremony, it was a huge, I was in Wales up in Snowdonia, so there's not a lot of light at night. It's very dark and huge full moon, and I received the message that I had to come home and walk the path of my ancestors. Well, for me, my ancestors are both African and Native American. And I was told that I would start at the north, and I had to walk to the south through the Appalachian Mountains from Pennsylvania on en route to Georgia. And in the northern part of that, I had to do prayers for my ancestors who came and were captured in the slave trade and pray for healing and reconciliation for them. And then I was told in the southern end with my Cherokee ancestry that I had to pray for those who were caught up in the Trail of Tears. And so having walked that 64-day journey, by the end of that, I was a different person. I was reborn. And that was in 2000. And from that point on, what happened 2 years later, we went to Africa and walked through the jungles and the door of no return where the Africans were captured and brought over. And then it was to start, then in 2005 was the World Walk, and began that walk in Georgia, when, you know, across the country in six continents. And in between that journey and the one in Africa, I spent 3 years doing my master's in indigenous science and traveling with traditional elders from one country to another, where they just wanted to get together and share stories. And so I had an opportunity to escort, say, for instance, Mr. Haile Makua Ngāti Poepoe from Hawaii to South Africa to meet with Baba Kredo Mutwa, and just to be in the mix of these conversations, you know something's being imparted. And that green space that you talked about, the heart chakra, the capstone, it just lights up inside of you. It certainly lit up my heart in ways that I had to spend and am still spending the rest of my life realizing what does that really mean for the work that I'm here to do. And, you know, my work, I'm learning to realize that I sort of stand at the intersection of a lot of differences, what we might call differences. You know, I know there was a time when we had to, you know, the dark sun came and we had to hide the knowledge, and it was hidden with all the different tribes and different groups around the world. And now is a time when these all of us are coming back together, and, you know, we have to remember this story, the stories that connect us to a time when we all walked and we communicated and we shared together on this planet. And what's so unique and in this whole story that I'm trying to capture in a few minutes for me is that I can really see the green center, I can see the heart center, and I know we can get there. And I know that there's a lot that we have to go through to get there. And at the same time, I can see this folding of time and space where all of a sudden we can be there. But we can't be there without going back. We got to go back and retrieve and remember the stories and remember the pathway to weave them back together again. But what's so important about this time, as you all know, you know, we've all been here in this space for a minute, is that we don't have time. We don't have, you know, forever. We have to make really important choices in these next, you know, I'd say 20 years. We have to make serious choices about remembering our relationship with Mother Earth and with humanity, with the cosmos. We have to remember this. And so my journey right now and takes many paths, but all the work that I do right now is how to raise that heart chakra, that heart vibration, to the point where it twinkles like the lights in the heavens, and it twinkles in us everywhere we show up. And when we connect and we touch, we know that we're moving forward, that the world is, things are changing, and it's in our hearts, in our hands, and we can make that shift happen. We just have to be the change right now. And I'm not saying that in a way that's a cliche. I'm saying being the change is big work. It's big. You know, it's the purification that it takes to hold that center so that everything can happen is a lot. But there are many of us that are being called forward into that right now, and to find a way of connecting and holding that is so important. And so I you got me caught up in all kind of energy flowing through me right now that I may not be answering the questions that you wanted, but I think I'll just stop there, and if you have questions, then I'll go forward.
Well, let's take a 1 minute break and then get our thoughts together, and we'll be right back. How's that sound?
That sounds great.
Okay, hang on.
Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church, or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading.
If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to NativeAmericanChurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
Father was a man who could never understand the shame on a red man's face. So they lived in the hills and they never came down to the street in the white man's place. Early in the spring when the snow had disappeared, they came down with a bag of skins. In the fall of the year of 1910, Daddy died by the road down in Cherokee Bend. Daddy didn't like what the white man said about the dirty little kid at his side. Daddy didn't like what the white man did, nor the deal or the way that he lied. There was blood on the floor of the government store when the men took his daddy away. And the boy stayed by till he come to his end, and he run like the wind from Cherokee Bend. Now the mother was alone. And she prayed to her spirit kin. It was warm in the lodge in the Kentucky hills on the day when the boy came in. Then a blizzard came down and it covered up the door till they thought that it never would end. And he told her the tale of the terrible affair in the government store down in Cherokee Bend. Daddy didn't like what the white man said about the dirty little kid at his side. Daddy didn't like what the white man did, nor the deal or the way that he lied. For 3 long days and 3 long nights, they wept and they mourned and then she returned to her work and her weaving, and they tried to forget about Cherokee Bend.
Away. It was 1910 and they never had a friend.
by the rope down in Cherokee Bay. It was 1910 and they never had a friend when he died by the rope down in Cherokee Bay.
When I read that Audrey was from Alabama, I figured she's probably a Cherokee. And I'm not sure how much you know about the Cherokees in Alabama, but I'm enrolled in the Cherokee tribe of Northeast Alabama. And I'm also the international spokesman for the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, which is... the Spanish started, well, long story short, we were federally recognized in 2001. And after we were recognized, they took us into the archives in Mexico and they gave us copies of stuff that had been signed by our ancestors. And, I mean, we've got six treaties that the Cherokee Nation never even heard of. So,
what? Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Our chief is a oncologist, and his grandmother was a plant woman, and his grandfather was a personal cook for Geronimo, worked for the Army. And but yeah, you can read about him at CherokeeDiscovery.com. Charles Rogers and his family were written up in the Congressional Record because they were able to locate the long lost tomb of Sequoia. And I'd like to invite anybody out there that would like to become a member of the Cherokee Nation of Mexico to go to CherokeeDiscovery.com. There's no charge. We'd love to have you if you don't have Cherokee blood and like to be adopted into our Ani Gilohi Longhair clan, we'd love to talk with you also, and just get in touch with us. And you know, a special invitation for Audrey to do that. And if you're in a position to do that, and you know, I'd suspect. I'll bet. There's a lot. There is a lot of Cherokees down in, and. What it was is Dragon Canoes people, the Chickamaugas, they ended up going down there. And then a lot of them did go to Oklahoma later, but because the war that's been going on inside the Cherokee Nation to this date, there are certain families that are being kept out of enrollment with the BIA-recognized tribes. And of course, this is all internal history that Cherokee historians know about, and not a lot of Cherokees know about. And but anyway, yeah, I figured you're a Cherokee.
Well, you figured that right. And I'm going to check out CherokeeDiscovery.com as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so you, what you were saying, what's happened to you? Let me ask you a question. How old are you?
I'll be 60 on June 18th.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Was there something? Did you have another big change in your life when you were 30?
Well, it was around 35 that I had the what I might call the heart awakening experience or the heart attack.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and then it was also around that time I've been living. When I was a child, I was born with a veil, and I only say that because a lot of times children who are born with veils tend to have certain experiences or, I guess you could say, psychic abilities, what have you. And but when I got to be about 16, I wanted all of that to stop. So I from 16 to 30, I pretty much tried to live without, you know, just kind of not pretending that didn't exist. But around 30, there were some things that happened that opened that energy back up. And, you know, I had these, when I was talking about that 89-day experience, all my life I've had these four old ladies in spirit that I always call my angels or my guides. And when I asked them to go away so I could be like everybody else, they did.
Yeah.
And I knew they were always lurking in the background. So around the time that you're talking about, that whole 30, I would say 29 to 35 year period was so much change was happening that, so much change. My whole life was like torn apart and put back together again. But basically because I was trying to run away from who I was. And it came down to the point, either you're going to live the path that you agreed to come here to live, or you won't be here. I had to make a choice.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and the universe can really sock it to you.
Mm-hmm.
I've been widowed twice, and my second wife came up with a she had a very interesting idea about how things worked. She was a firm believer that Creator gave everybody free will, but she says how does that now my third wife Linda, she's really struggling with these kind of things and torn up about stuff that's happened in life and everything, and just really and starting to let go of it. But Betty, my second wife, her theory was, hey, she says for this to be fair, for this life to be fair, we had to choose these experiences. We had to sign up for this stuff before we ever came here. And we may have been presented with a list of things we needed to learn before we came this time. And ever since she taught me that, now she had, she still had other issues from childhood and borderline personality disorder and PTSD, all that stuff can really screw you up.
Right.
And
right.
My first wife died at age 48, and my second wife was her best friend. And the marriage, it's a long story, but I've told it before, but the marriage was prearranged. And I was told in a dream that another woman was going to join the family, and her name middle name would be Joe. And my first wife's first name was Joanne. And I also had a dream where Joanne brought a woman with no face to me and motioned the woman forward, and the woman who was about a half a head shorter kissed me on the left cheek, and my first wife disappeared to my right in a dark background.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, and it was, six months later, she came, we found out she was terminal cancer, lived a month, and, but it, oddly enough, the second wife, Betty, she had five kids. She was, the first wife was 8 years older, second wife was 12 years older. And her kids were all grown, but she, her husband threatened to divorce her because she knew she was supposed to have another child, a boy named Joseph. And Joanne and my son's name was Joseph. So you can see some of the stuff I've been dragged through by Creator. But boy, you if all this happened to you since 1998, and 1998 was the year that I literally moved back and lived with my Cherokee people in the Southeast. And so, Mark, I mean, it just doesn't fail. This is an amazing way. It's not fortune telling. It's just giving an idea of, how you're wired, what you ought to be doing. And yeah, everybody that comes on here is really astounded, except for a few that have had maybe four of these readings. And and some of the Mayan, we've had Mayan elders on here, and they won't tell you their sign. Or they might tell you the glyph, but they're supposed to keep certain things. So we really had, Mark and I really had a lot of fun with this, over the last couple of years. And Mark contacted me, I guess, back in 2008, and I had no flipping idea, what he was talking about. Well, you can see he's got about a 190 IQ, and it took about 6 months to a year before I figured out, and of course, then I had to mine birthday stuff come at me from another direction that same time. So, yeah, it's just, you know, it's just beat me over the head. It, you know, a lot of it, geez, you know, I really wasn't even allowed to brush up against my people until I was about 30. And I knew from the time I was 16, I was given my Cherokee genealogy all the way back to the 1700s. And I've since gotten more back to the 1500s, which is really odd and unusual. But,
that's amazing because, you know, I remember the elders when just sitting in circle with them and the Polynesian elders, and they can chant their ancestry. There were two in the circle that could chant their ancestry from modern times all the way back and to the stars.
Yeah, they're royalty. Oh, the only people could do that is royalty.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, but, you know, you said on, well, one of the first song you played, that segment of the first song that you played about this being that time of remembering, it would be my summary from that. And isn't that so important right now, though? You know, I find that this is really a time of revelation in the sense of things are being revealed so that we can make these connections, because we need all of this in order to make the decisions that we have to make and even know how to be in the world today. You know, you just can't ignore that lineage that exists in all of us, you know. And people always ask me, well, you know, you're around so many different elders from so many different traditions, you know, how do you handle the ceremony? And I say every time we sit in ceremony with the elders, I said it's like medicine just being poured in, and I always feel stronger. You know, I know that sometimes, you know, on the other side of that experience, there may be that purification process, but it always takes us to a stronger place, you know, and right now we need that strength to, you know, we've got to hold the center together as everything's spiraling out right now so that we can bring it back in, you know.
How close are you to Birmingham?
I'm about 4 hours. I'm down on the bottom end of Alabama, down by
Creek.
You know the Porch Creek?
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
Yeah, I'm down by the Porch Creek, about an hour from the Porch Creek Reservation down there.
I was curious. I had some friends in Birmingham. That's gorgeous country. It's piney woods. It's kind of flat. If anybody's ever driven down through Alabama, you'll notice that it's got a lot of varying terrain, and it's a beautiful place, particularly northeast Alabama and northern Alabama, and it gets scrubbier and flatter the further you go south, but it's a beautiful place, and you just don't want to hit Birmingham at rush hour. I've done that a lot. Yeah, I did it a big rig for a while. I went from graduate school to driving a truck for 3 years.
Uh-huh. Wow.
And I mean, it's just been wacky. But had I not gone to that, you know, brief, you know, 6-8 months of graduate school, there's certain things I wouldn't have learned because they were only in a small newspaper. It was only in about 7 towns in that, you know, area. And I mean, it's like wild, you know, I mean, you know, one day it's just weird. It's really quite a sweeping experience, and we're not alone. These kinds of things are happening to a lot of people. And tell us some more. I've been interrupting a lot. I don't usually do this much talking, you know, or if you're, you know, whenever you're done, just let me know. You know, we've got another half hour. We could talk, or we could, you know, whenever you do need to go, let us know.
Okay. Well, let me just, you know, say again, I mentioned the book, Awakening the Heart of the Beloved Community, and it is available on Amazon. You can put in Awakening the Heart of the Beloved Community or put my name in, it'll come up. So that's just a little plug. And if anybody wants to know more about the work that I do, they can go to Audrey, and that's A-U-D-R-I, so AudreyScottWilliams.com, and my contact information is there, so I just wanted to let people know that. I guess that, you know, in there's so many things, you know, to talk about, and we had a big gathering. I guess I know you had Phil Lane on not too long ago, and Keith Phil Lane Jr., and he was a part of a gathering we did up in last year about this. We were getting ready for it. It was the last week in June, first week in July, and we had 33 elders, wisdom keepers from around the world, different traditions, through the United Religions Initiative, the Global Indigenous Initiative there, and we had an incredible gathering. We talk about Alabama. There was a lady wisdom keeper there from grandmother from the Republic of Altai in Siberia. And when she would speak her native language, there was a lot of similarity between the language of Altai and the Cherokee language, even the word Alabama. And so she was translating certain words that are found in the Cherokee language and saying what the Altai meaning was. And it really gave me a sense of she says that they talk about from her tradition how her people traveled across the northern routes and into North America and then down into various parts of Turtle Island. And there's a language trail that connects. Have you ever heard about that?
Oh yeah, yeah. The, not particularly Siberian, but the connections out of the Middle East and the connections of Sequoia's original syllabary was identical, pretty much, to Old Syriac, and just all kind. But you know, there's all kinds of people that migrated out of the Levant, you know, to China and other places, so yeah, there's
right.
But
yeah.
you're talking about something a lot more ancient, and
yes.
you know, now when a Cherokee tells you thus and such, you know, it might be true about your ancestors, it might not be, because we originally had about over 80 clans.
That's right, and
they were, you know, always. I mean, currently they honor 7 clans, but it wasn't long ago they were honoring 14. And but there is a persistent story that there is the most persistent stories about the Pleiades, but another persistent story is at least some of us, some of our clans came across the Eastern Ocean during the Stone Age. And of course, with the programs Ice Age Columbus, and if you get a chance to watch Ice Age Columbus, you can see how this could have been accomplished. You know, and then you could start getting into, you know, to archaeology and some other things that really are underlining what our elders said, was that there was a migration. Of course, the Chickasaw talk about migrating. And across the ocean too, and landing in what's Mexico, and walking up the Gulf Coast and to what's now Mississippi. And there have been so many migrations, and for so much longer than anybody can imagine. I mean, the Phoenicians, they knew about the topography of Antarctica before it had an ice cap. There was a Turkish admiral that had a map, you know, showing the Western Africa and Eastern South America all the way up to Amazon River, and then showing features of Antarctica that science didn't even know until the 1980s when they started using ground-penetrating radar. So they were really getting around. And the Cherokee connection to the Phoenix bird and those people, and the fact that we knew we were mariners, but we preferred to live up in the mountains, and because we were afraid of floods. But the first land session we had, you know, in South Carolina was, you know, between Columbia and the coast. And but oh yeah, it's
yeah.
Amazing.
So let me ask you a question. You because of the connection with the Maya, do you know much about the history of the Cherokee with the Maya? Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yep. Well, if you go to CherokeeDiscovery.com, you're going to see evidence that we probably lived alongside the Mayans, and you'll be looking at jade carvings and other stuff that's been found down there. And but it's not just that; it's the Eastern Band. If you go to their Wikipedia page, they talk about this controversial thing about our language trail. You know, it's something I kind of started back in about 10 years ago, and all of a sudden, after being laughed at, you know, we're being told we're right, you know, which is the usual thing that happens. But
yeah, exactly.
The Eastern Band produced a video, and from what I understand, they are claiming that we are the ancestors of the Mayans and Aztecs.
Ah,
and
okay.
Because we know at least those people that came over, you know, from Europe would have been like 17,000 years ago. And
asking because I've been in different ceremonies in different places, and
the big giveaway is that we dance counterclockwise.
Yeah,
which is
exactly.
Which, yeah, and we've always done that. Yeah. We've always, you know, behind everybody else's backs, we considered everybody that didn't dance counterclockwise, as some went so far as to say that they were witches, you know, which is really
right.
Being contrary. But, you know, us, the Hopi, which the anthropologists say that the Cherokee and the Hopi were the twin fires.
Mm-hmm.
And the Aztecs, you know, they dance counterclockwise, so yeah, it's pretty simple. And but
right.
You know, many, many, many people don't know, you know, that the largest part of the Cherokee Nation migrated in 1721. They migrated back to Mexico,
mm-hmm.
And these things are written up in Cherokee history, so people don't know the history. And
right.
You know, they go to a few gatherings, and all of a sudden they're an instant expert. And it's like my friend. It's like my friend Elder John Duke. He said he had COPD. I'll make fun of him a little bit. He's a rabbi. They appreciate you. But his faith was he converted to Judaism, but he was raised in the old Ketua religion. But he said anybody that claims to be a Cherokee expert is probably neither.
Probably
yeah, it's because
yeah.
You know the things do vary from clan to clan you know clan orders. But you know overall you know we're pretty much but you could go on Blog Talk
yeah.
and put in Charles Rogers Cherokee and
okay.
he's the real guy. You know, we've got
okay.
him on tape for several interviews, you know, talking about our history and him with Brian Wilkes talking about the Cherokee marine voyages, you know, ancient and all that stuff. So, yeah, we've got quite a bit up online.
Yeah, I'm going to make an attempt to kind of summarize. Well, I've got to go. I've got 14 grandchildren. I've got eight of them here with me this evening. But I just wanted to say that speaking of how we're all connected is so important because, and I don't know how you would relate to it, but, you know, there's so much happening right now, and a lot of people sometimes, you know, we in our culture right now, we don't connect with the implications of a lot of things that have been going on, you know, some for many, many years, and how this is a time that as we walk our own path, you know, it's about really, really being in that space of being truth tellers, and the only way we can get to truth is to remember who we are. But I just want to leave with saying that, you know, I don't intend to make anything so great, but my passion is for I've got 14 grandkids, and I want them to have a world that they can live in and be whole and healthy and generations to come. And if we look at that, we will remember that our ancestors are working with us so much, and the Creator is working with us so much. And if we just embrace all the aspects of who we are without judgment, but really, really go into that space and excuse me, find the balance, you know, and be in that space of joy and treat each other with great respect. It's amazing how much transformation and change can happen in a short period of time. And I just think that all the history that we hold is so rich. And as we learn about the past, just remember to also use that past to springboard into the future. What do we have to do? How do we look at laws that need to be changed? How do we look at ways that, you know, decisions that are being made that make one life less important than another? And you know, so we then speak our truth in the midst of that. And how do we come together to do that? That's really what this time is about right now. And I just appreciate you giving me an opportunity to be on your show. I've enjoyed it. And I look forward to a continued relationship.
Absolutely. Well, no, you're busy. We'll let you go. Appreciate
you.
All right, talk to you soon.
All right.
Hey, good night. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Join us to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Friends, this is your co-host, Will Bluewater. Join us now to learn how to legally worship using indigenous earth-based healing and empowering ceremonies. Aho. As Blue Water, seventh great-grandson of Old Tassel, first beloved man of the Cherokee, I'm remembering what Old Tassel said to the prevailing culture. Many proposals have been made to us to adopt your laws, your religion, your manners, and your customs. We have done so. Now it is time for our cultures to accept Old Tassel's ways and assisting us to walk in harmony with Mother Earth and Father Sky. Aho.
So that I may remember.